Pseudopod episode 128, February 6th, 2009. This week's story, Bone Mother by Maura McHugh. Hi, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair, and this week's story comes to us from the excellent Maura McHugh, whose fiction, non-fiction, and poetry can be found at splinister.com. Your narrator this week is a woman who should need no introduction, Kat Rambo. However, if she does, make sure you check out her website at kittywampus.net. In the meantime, make sure you've got your story straight and practice the charm, then practice it again. Then once more, seriously, you need to, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Bone Mother by Maura McHugh. The house tilted. A thigh bone rolled off my kitchen table and clattered onto the floorboards. I cocked my head and waited for a warning. Silence. It was still sulking. I whacked its bony walls with my hawthorn stick. "Out with it," I said. "A man approaches, you withered old crone." The floor trembled with irritation. "A fine house you are, allowing a stranger to sneak up on me." I pulled tangles back from my ears, which set off the rat skulls knotted into my hair. A tap from my stick shut their jawbones. The jingle of a horse's reins drifted through the half-open window. I knocked my walking stick against the rafter fashioned from a mammoth tusk, carved with runes. All activity ceased. My servants, three pairs of disembodied hands, hung in the air above the table, paused in their task of sorting the stack of bones into animal or human. The spiders that infested the thatch stopped in mid-spin. Cobwebbed chains of nails and bundles of herbs swayed from the beam. The only sound was the breathing of the red brick oven. It huffed out a ball of disgruntled smoke. Ouch! I scuttled to the window and propped my dugs on the sill as I leaned out to get a gander at the fellow. Despite the lingering sting of that morning's quarrel, I trusted the house to shield me from his eyes. From my vantage point, I should have had a fine view across the compound, past the skeleton fence and into the breathless gap between the forest and my home, but my weak eyes only saw a blurred outline of a man on a horse leading a pack animal. My long nose twitched. It makes drinking from small cups inconvenient, but I can smell yesterday's fart and last night's nightmare. I sniffed. Mud from the mountains weighs his cloak. It was woven from wool in... I inhaled again. Moldavia. Underneath the sweat and the reek of blood and death is a memory of cloves and cinnamon. "Can I eat him?" the house whined. I caressed its bleached white walls, and it leaned into my touch. The fire sighed. "Cross your gutters that he doesn't know the charm," I said, and squinted for better sight. The man halted at the gate and glanced upwards, but the hood drowned his face in shadow. There wasn't a whiff of fear from him at the sight of the gatepost topped with glowing skulls. Leather creaked, and he rose in his stirrups. He brandished a wand that stank of borrowed magic. The man wove a glyph into the air, and I leaned back, wary. The sigil flashed like sparks from a smithy's fire. Even I could see it. My knuckles cracked as I tightened my grip on the window. "House of bone, lower your legs and rest. Gate of skulls, admit this guest," he said. "He knows it," the house moaned. Its giant chicken legs creaked, and the floor bobbed as it shuffled around so the front door faced the gate. It eased downwards. "I haven't heard that version since the plague," I muttered, and slammed the window shut. With a snap of my fingers, the hands sprang into action and tidied the bones into the oak chest where I kept leftovers. They blinked out of existence at another click. I picked up a file and sawed at my iron teeth for a moment. With the tip of my tongue, I tested its edge, nice and sharp. I lowered myself almost double and clawed at my hair so the matted weave trailed after me. "Ow! Ow! Ow!" said the rat skulls as they clacked off the floor. The house crashed into the ground and I grabbed a wall to steady myself. I poked it in the ribs. Smoke belched from the fire as an apology. The door swung open. The man had dismounted and thrown back his cloak over one shoulder to reveal a pleated, tight-fitting jacket, leggings, and splattered riding boots. His right hand flirted with his sword hilt, which smelled of Spain, hot fires, and whetstones. I groveled low. "Can I help you, my lord?" "I doubt it, hag," he said. I stabbed my stick into the dirt path instead of skewering his eyeballs. "I seek the Bone Witch." He peeled off his gloves and peered past my hunched back into the room beyond. His accent had a Wallachian base with a Turkish flourish. Who wishes an audience with the mistress of bones? Vladislav Bursarab. His ancestry sang in his name, ruthless and stubborn rulers of southern Transylvania. I saw the native Dacians of his lineage surge on horses against the invading Romans, then the Penichegs, and later the Mongols, but most recently the Turks. His was a pedigree of resistance and tyranny. I unfolded myself slowly until my head brushed the lintel. He stepped back and looked up. Wet black hair slicked his high cheekbones, but the twin dark wells of his eyes reflected nothing. Baba Yaga bids you welcome, young Vladislav, son of the dragon. The rat skulls chittered my praise. Do you come of your own free will, or did someone send you? The house leaned in to hear his response. The wrong answer would grant us a meal. From under his cloak, he produced a blue rose. How had I not sensed it? I tasted the peppery tang of cunning magic I had thought forgotten in Christian lands. My eyelids lowered at the flower's intoxicating scent. It promised porcelain skin, clear eyes, and an end to aching joints. All I could see were the sky-blue petals that curled away from an indigo center. As if from a distance, I heard his answer. I come to trade, Bone Mother, for the secrets of life and death. The souls of the damned trapped in my house's walls screeched their frustration. The flower lay on the table, and its perfume lulled me. It conjured memories, sienna eyes under copper hair, a spurned hand, a drop of blood, and the pact of guardianship which brought long life in a decaying shell. I blinked the past away and did not stare at the rose, despite my desire. The infrequent potions I concocted from its petals were all that revived my body. When last I'd tasted its ambrosia, Alexander had held Constantinople. I summoned my servants. And at least Vladislav started in surprise as one wizened hand wielded a poker on the embers while the other held open the oven's door. The other two pairs bore blue-patterned china plates and wide navy glasses to the table. Vladislav shrugged off his cloak on the back of a big chair with arms made of wolf's rib cages and a seat covered in cured pygmy skins. He settled into it, comfortable, and stroked the curving bone. I perched on the three-legged stool made from minotaur horns. He leaned down, pulled a bottle of kvass from a greasy saddlebag and placed it on the table. He was irritatingly well-prepared. "Where did you find the rose?" I snapped. "My mother's people are from Moldavia." He picked up the rose by its black stem and twirled it slowly. The thorns had an evil, curved point. He laid it upon the table a little closer to me. "You imperil your soul with such deviltry." I restrained a smirk. "The Lord guides my path. He delivered me from the Turks and urges me to build a strong Wallachia." I nodded at one pair of hands and they poured kvass into the containers. "I understand your younger brother, Radu, enjoyed Turkish company, the Sultan's in particular." Vladislav's knuckles whitened as he gripped the glass. If he broke it, I'd fillet him like a trout and damn the rules of hospitality. Maybe he was wise to spurn women. They offer little besides a dowry and heirs. Once I'd stopped a man's heart with a glance, but his eyes did not flinch from my gaze. I grabbed my tits and gazed down at them. "Yes, still a woman." He pulled back in disgust. I leaned forward and hissed, "Still a witch." "The Lord protects me from your wickedness." And his hand crept to the crucifix around his neck. "To faith," I said, however misguided, and knocked back the kvass. I smacked my lips as he swallowed the alcohol in one gulp. "Is your father well?" I asked, hoping for a lie and a way to break peace. I dug my nails into the palms of my hands and glanced again at the flower, luminous in the candlelight. I had smelled his father's bones wrapped up in elk's leather on the back of Vladislav's mule. "Slaughtered by Hunyadi's army, along with my mother." He paused and turned the glass in his hand so the light spun a shower of navy stars across the table and the rose. I smelled blood as my nails punctured my skin. "They buried my brother alive. I never found his grave." "I heard you were routed from the capital, and ran to Bogdan of Moldavia, squealing for sanctuary." I gave him a good view of my iron teeth as I smiled. The glass vibrated when he banged it on the table. "I will take Turgovist again." I gestured towards the rose. "What's your price?" "I need the advice of my father to regain the throne." I waited. He moved the flower again, almost within my reach. "You are the guardian of the waters of life and death," he said. "It lies within your power to resurrect him." "The flower's not worth necromancy." I was lying. Mourn your family, marry, have children, and teach them to fight. There were always Turks and Christians to slaughter. Were you ever beautiful, witch? His tone was cold like the earth under ice. How many wrinkles could this flower erase? It was so close. A sliver of brown edged a cerulean petal. He'd removed the charm that kept it fresh. Now it rotted slowly. I had only a couple of days. If you take it by force, it will turn to ash instantly, he whispered. The spicy taste of a spell lingered. Something akin to admiration sparked in me. Or maybe it was fury. I've always had difficulty telling them apart. I have to gather the waters. He nodded. Tomorrow, then. You sleep in the barn, I added, if you want to pass the night unmolested. He grimaced at my leer. I woke to the sound of the hands reviving the fire and laying out food. I crunched the shells of the eggs they left me for breakfast and sucked the wiggling embryos in one go. After some grumbling, the house lowered itself to the ground. Just kill him, Bone Mother, it said as it hit the earth hard, and feed his bones to my fire. The flames capered. I stretched out my hand and my birch broom swept into it. He has the rose, I said. Keep locked up tight and high above the ground. I looked at my hands, gnarled with pain, and imagined them smooth. Besides, who says I can't have him after I get the flower? The door creaked open, and I inhaled the scent of clouds boiling over the snow-capped Fogaris Mountains, a fox ripping into a hare's flesh, and the sweat of the young man who leaned against the doorway of my barn. Straw stuck to his clothes. After all, I said, when I'm younger again, I'll have needs. I whistled, and from inside the barn, Vlad's horse screamed, and the mule kicked the walls. He turned and leapt out of the path of my huge iron mortar, which whizzed past him and across the ground to hover beside me. Aware of his appraising gaze, I jumped inside the mortar's bowl and showed no trace of the pain the impact caused. I brandished the long pine pestle in my right hand. There was wonder in his face, and he smelled of excitement, but not fear. I frowned. I'll expect payment when I return, Voivovi. I cracked the pestle against the ancient iron, and the mortar climbed towards the sky. The ground beneath quaked, and the trees around the compound bent and shook like they were whipped by fierce winds. The house straightened its legs and rose as I drifted upwards. I shrieked, urging the mortar across forests and rivers, and swept away my trail with a broom. My hair streamed after me, and the rat skulls sang of dead cats and dunghills. I returned to my compound at twilight, exhausted. Each time the trip took longer, but I could almost taste the honeyed infusion of blue petals on my tongue. The earth shuddered and the trees flailed as the mortar eased downwards. The house squatted on the ground. The door was open and no smoke breathed from the chimney. I hopped from the mortar, dropped the pestle and broom to the ground, gripped the skins of water to my chest, and hobbled on my walking stick to the doorway. My house was in disarray. Bloodied fingers from my servants lay scattered on the floor. The door to the stove was open and the fire was dead. A lone blue petal stirred amid the ashes scattered before the hearth, and the charred end of a rose stem lay in the cold oven. The hawthorn fell from my grip to the floorboards. A fingerless palm lay in the center of the table, impaled by a dagger. Soot streaked the walls. He'd tried to burn my home. I glanced up. The runes of making on the mammoth tusk were intact. Mundane fire wasn't enough. Fury trembled my limbs. Mother, my house babbled between cries. He made me. I'm sorry. I told him where to go. I told him the source from where the rivers spring. I picked up the petal between thumb and forefinger. If I was careful and brewed the potion well, it was good for a thimbleful, enough to ease the pain for 50 years and to remind me of youth, but not granted. The process would take a week, and Vladislav would be gone. Fatigue gnawed my body. Why did you let him in? I was so hungry, and he had bones. I leaned my forehead against a wall and stroked its filthy surface. My hand shook. Eventually, hate and age weighed me down onto the stool as my house retold the story of its ordeal. If I was careful. I gathered twigs and paper and muttered the charm that lit its flame, even though it cost me strength. Gently, I fed the fire with logs after it caught and burned. He is mad, the house whispered, and it puffed angry dark smoke. He has a mission, I said. My home stank of fear and surrender. It was ravenous, and I needed servants. I brushed the soft petal against my dry cheek and inhaled its perfume. It promised pain-free years to hunt for another rose, if I was careful. I was the guardian of the waters of life and death. None could drink them without my permission. I slipped the petal under my tongue. Saliva flooded my mouth at its sweet taste. Strength returned, and I rose to my full height. I uncurled my hands and remembered my power. The rat skulls rattled like ivory dice. The petal dissolved in my mouth. Through the open door, I stared at the night sky. The moon was the shape of an ox skull's horns. I would spear the Wallachian prince upon them. I would girdle my home with his entrails and wash its walls with his pulp. I bounded from the house and leaped as high as a mountain goat into the mortar as it rose at my command. The door to my house slammed shut, and its legs quivered as it heaved the structure from the ground. Vladislav would pay for that weakness. I struck the pestle against the side of my mortar, and it was a roll of thunder. The iron bowl thrust into the sky. I shrieked my displeasure, and every living being within earshot fell to the ground and pissed itself in fear. He had already drunk from the stream of life by the time I arrived. Trees snapped and broke under the force of my fury as I landed in the clearing before the cave. I hurtled from the mortar before it landed, and rock cracked underneath my boots. Vladislav waited at the entrance, resplendent in armor. Charms etched into his breastplate glowed, and old enchantments misted his drawn sword blade. His belief had not stopped him from thieving spells from the mountain folk who had gleaned their tricks from water, earth, and air. I had been the midwife of such magic. "I am now immortal, old woman," Vladislav's voice rang with faith and arrogance. "I am the instrument of righteousness. I shall crush the unfaithful, guide the humble." I snapped my fingers, and the blade tore from his grasp and embedded hilt first in a boulder of granite. Its edge shone in the light of the moon's horns. I clapped my hands, and his breastplate fell apart and clanked on the ground. Yet he crouched and grinned as I rushed towards him, my hands spread wide, my nails sharp, and my teeth bared. "Come on," he goaded, and the crucifix around his neck glinted. I punched him, broke his thin nose, and he flew back into the rock wall and his ribs shattered. He spat blood from his mouth, but did not moan. His dark eyes were wells of brutality. Within them I spied years of torture and a glacial promise forged in a Turkish prison. He would visit horror on any who caused him pain, family, ally, or ancient foe. I seized the front of his tunic and threw him upon his sword. It impaled his chest. It was excruciating, but he would not die. Not now. Immortality kept him from death, but not from suffering or decay. I knew the cost well. He lay on the ground, the sword skewered through his broken chest, and blood splattered on his face. Yet he laughed, choked, sneered. "You'll dry up like dust, witch. No rose will restore your bloom." The sugary taste faded. I stood above him and uncapped one of the skins. I reached down, squeezed his jaws, and pried them open. I poured the waters of death into his mouth and watched his eyes widen as he sensed the change. His wounds healed, the blood flow ceased, and his heart stopped. I hunkered down beside him, my bony knees level with my ears, as he flopped like a landed fish. "You are alive, Vladislav, but you are also dead. You will thirst for blood, but it will never satisfy you. Your victims will be legion, and my house and I will feed upon their corpses. You will drive your enemies from your land, but you will never know peace or redemption." I pulled him from his sword and threw him across the clearing. Flesh sizzled, and Vladislav's limp hands scrabbled at his neck. He ripped the crucifix off and threw it to the ground. I grinned. "Only the sun will unravel this spell." The prince shuddered and gasped as he died, and the red thirst gripped him. I reached down and ripped a chunk of hair from his scalp. He screamed and bared his teeth. They had a new sharpness. I showed him the bloody hank before I tucked it into a pocket. "My revenge upon you will be long in coming and complete." The sweetness died in my mouth. He attempted to rise and failed. I hid my limp as I walked to the mortar and climbed carefully into its basin. With the strike of the pestle, the mortar ascended into darkness, and I did not look back. I sewed Vladislav's hair into a hexing doll to keep track of him over the years. Whenever my house and I were hungry, I'd ask it where Vladislav had last visited. It would pull its awkward woolen body upright and point its crude hand towards bloodshed. Vlad the Impaler massacred thousands while he dined on food that never nourished him and consorted with women who never pleased him. He delivered misery and terror in his drive to slack an endless appetite. We feasted well during his reign. Always I hunted for a blue rose, but it eluded me. One night, as I whipped my mortar through the air, I sensed a change in the hexing doll, which I kept in my pocket. It raised a limp arm. I followed its signs until I crossed the Danube and traversed the lands of the Ottoman Empire, where the white-turbaned men shrank from my shadow. After a tiring journey, the doll drew me to a city of spires, minarets, and gold domes, where the prayers rang out as the sky pinked for the dawn, the smell of cloves and cinnamon wafted upwards. There I found him, or what was left. His head was stuck upon a spear, the spine and throat ragged and hinting at a long and torturous decapitation. I dropped the hexing doll and watched it land with a spray of sparks in a charcoal brazier far below. I flew close so my failing sight could behold his death. His eyelids fluttered open, and the thirst continued to rage in his eyes. I smiled, baring my iron teeth. The muscles around his lips twitched into a rictus. The first rays of sunlight touched his face and seared it black. His mouth opened, but whether it was to howl or laugh, I did not know. As his eyes boiled, I thought of the luminous blue flower and the beauty he'd stolen from me. He'd gotten off easy. I clacked pine against iron and urged the mortar upwards. Sluggish, it lifted above the clouds where my passing would go unnoticed. I slumped against the cold metal. The pestle and broom were heavy in my aged hands. In the airless cerulean expanse, I tasted a burst of nectar. My movements were fluid and painless. The far mountains and forests of my birthplace sharpened and became clear. I smelled gore from a recent battlefield far beneath me, fresh food for the pot. The rat skulls chattered nonsense. I floated towards home.
As I said a couple of weeks ago, I've been doing some parapsychology reading, and one of the areas that's fascinating me is the idea that modern parapsychology in particular maps onto studies of folklore. There are the same basic stories, the same creatures, the same truths at the heart of both of them. They just wear different clothes, and in some cases, maybe come from different planets. They have adapted to fit into our world, these stories, in the same way animals camouflage themselves, and as long as we treat the things that live inside these stories with the same caution we treat wild animals with, we can study and understand them. The Night Watch series of books and films is a beautiful example of this, and the message that it communicates is clear. The monsters of the past are still here, they just wear better clothes, and sometimes they live across the street from us. That is, unless they live in a house with chicken legs. Then they could live next door to any of us. Pseudopod does not have a chicken-legged house, but we really want one. Because with it, we could actually stalk the land, ensuring that unruly nobles would pay us tribute. However, until the chicken-legged house arrives, and Amazon have had it on back order for months now, we rely on you. So, rise up our pseudo-armies and click on Feed the Pod, because you'll make an author's day, and authors are actually pretty lovely people, and more importantly, we rely on you to pay them. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod is all too aware that if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, then chances are it's a duck with a meat cleaver.